well. I mean, there's another revealing British diplomat has discussions with Paddy Hillary in 1972, a couple of months after Bloody Sunday. Now, this is the British Dance recollection, so I don't know if it can be entirely trusted. But he says that Hillary says to him, you know, that people in the South are sentimental and emotional. They have been very upset over the North, but at the end of the day, they're not very hard people. Most of the violence is coming, particularly in the South, is coming from those who've come down from the North, and Northerners really are different. I think that's an interesting, it certainly wouldn't have been said publicly by a Fianna Fáil minister, but I think it does point again to the perception that a lot of people would have held.
What a Republican will tell you, what many Republicans will tell you about the Southern aspect of the conflict was that the Southern government physically and also kind of culturally, or in the realm of ideas, tried to repress the Republican movement.
Well, they did try to repress them because they saw them as a threat to the state. I mean, in 1972, Des O'Malley has spoken publicly about the fact that, you know, the official IRA, the provisional IRA and Saer Éireann, which would have been the three main Republican paramilitary organisations, were a threat to the state. And the Loyalists weren't a threat to the Southern state, really, although they became a physical threat because of their bombings, which the South did not see coming. And the Finlay Report, which is a secret report compiled after the escape of senior provisional IRA prisoners from Mountjoy by helicopter in 1973, huge embarrassment to the state. They authorise a major report into state security. And that comes to the conclusion, perhaps surprisingly, that the official IRA are the greatest threat to the Southern state. Second come the provisional IRA, because their main focus is on the North, but that could change. And then thirdly, Loyalists, who aren't thought to be a major threat. And the reason why we know that, because the report has never been released, is because of the Barron Commission into the Dublin Monaghan bombings. And it gives you some indication of the fact that the Southern state did not really see anything like Dublin Monaghan coming. So the Republicans are seen as a threat to the state. And there's also a fear, which is expressed then by, most graphically, by Conor Cruise O'Brien, and popularly by a few others, that basically the Southern state prides itself on its origins from the revolution. Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael and even some of the Labour Party are very proud of the old IRA. Therefore, most people in the South, deep down, have an emotional attachment to republicanism. And this is dangerous because it can be exploited by the IRA. Now, funnily enough, the flip side of that is the view among Republicans that deep down, most people in the South are Republicans as well, and that they're only through censorship or misinformation is this republicanism being held in check. And ironically, that's held by two opposing poles, really, by we might call the arch-revisionists and the Republicans themselves. I think there's certainly an element in that most people in the South did have an attachment to the idea of the independence struggle. But one of the interesting things, I think, about the view of the IRA in the South was that people really did believe in a good old IRA, and they didn't believe that the provisionals were anything like the good old IRA. So this is always a problem for Republicans. And there is censorship, there is an effort made to disengage, and in some ways that's very successful, because I think even today, if you hear a politician from Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael or Labour talking about the Irish economy, they mean the 26 county economy. If you hear them talking about it being unpatriotic to shop in Newry, which Fianna Fáil ministers did a few years ago, well, that's a partitionist mindset, to coin a phrase. And they honestly, I don't think, even think about what they're saying when they say things like that. But it does mean most people in the South do, when they think about Ireland, they think about the 26 counties. And that's already apparent in the 1970s, I think. What you can blame for the course is another day's work. And I suppose what's significant about civil liberties and repression is that there is an enormous amount of leeway given to the state here, which would be hugely controversial in Britain in the 1970s or even in the United States, that people can be held on the word of a senior Garda, that a senior Garda can tell a judge that he believes a person is a member of a subversive organisation and that his word is all that is needed. Now, again, Americans would be surprised, certainly pre-2001, at this kind of level of trust in the police and lack of accountability. The Special Criminal Court, the Very Stringent Offences Against the State Act, all those things are part of a response to the Northern conflict, which then become accepted by many people as kind of natural and aren't often, I mean, when I sometimes give lectures or talk to students in tutorials about aspects of the laws in Ireland. I mean, they're surprised to hear that, you know, it isn't the case that in every country that a policeman's word is simply taken for granted and you could be held, you know, without any evidence at all. But this is, you know, part of the response to the conflict. And of course, people like Des O'Malley and others argue that it's absolutely necessary because that the by 1972, the paramilitary organisations were becoming so confident, so brazen, that you couldn't have had a normal judicial system. And that they proved how brazen they were by their bank robberies, by their numerous attempts to break people out of prison, some which are successful, by their killing of people here, including not just Gardaí, but also politicians. Senator Billy Fox of Fine Gael killed in Monaghan, for example, in 1974. And that really stringent security measures were needed to combat subvert. The level of use of the army to back up the Gardaí, for example, and of sweeping judicial powers and censorship is something that I think it's been taken for granted without really being examined how pervasive that was and what it did to the way people behaved.
But if you talk to unionists, for example, they'll point to the 1950s when the IRA campaign then was more or less strangled by Southern repression, if you like, or use of internment, and that didn't happen in the conflict from the 70s onwards. So why didn't it happen?
Upsurge in the north after 1969 had a much bigger popular basis than the border campaign ever had, and had a real popular basis among nationalists in Northern Ireland, which then also for a while fed into a lot of sympathy and solidarity in the south. And internment certainly by 1971-72 probably would have been a disaster in the Republic as well. I mean, it probably would have been possible, but it wouldn't have been accepted as it was in 1957, when relatively small numbers of people are being locked up and people, you know, it isn't the case that internment's popular among the general public in the 1950s. It's seen as something which had occurred in the 40s and, you know, it's been done by De Valera and others, in fact. So, you know, it has some kind of legitimacy. Fianna Fáil threatened internment in December 1970. And there's a real controversial episode where Des O'Malley and others argue that they have information that subversives are going to kidnap government ministers. Internment might have to be introduced. And that's a public relations disaster. It's seen as essentially a PR move to try and win a by-election. And there's a backlash. And of course, it's very embarrassing when in August 1971 internment is introduced in Northern Ireland, because obviously the Jack Lynch condemns internment, says it's wrong, and the unionists respond, well, weren't you going to bring it in last year? You know, not just that you brought it in the 1950s, but, and I think that, so there's a number of reasons why internment wasn't really possible by the early 1970s, and plus its use in Northern Ireland really ruled it out in the south. It's now become a byword for brutality and for also, you know, arresting the wrong people, you know, in a way that it hadn't been actually up till then, to be fair. I mean, a lot of people in the south would have thought internment was a fairly useful weapon, and of course, you know, it was still on the books. It could have been introduced.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those counterfactual things. We'll never know what would have happened had it been brought in. So, move on, and just briefly, if you could you suggest, in terms of violence, how was the southern state affected by the Troubles?
Well, one of the ways that it's affected, and it's been, again, I think in popular memory, it's largely been forgotten. Most people have obviously have heard of the Dublin Monaghan bombings, the single biggest up to OMA, the single biggest and still the biggest in terms of fatalities, bombings of the Troubles. A member of the UVF is killed by his own bomb in Donegal in 1969. You have bombings in 1970, pretty small scale. By 1972, from the summer of 1972 onwards, bomb scares and bombs become a feature of life, really, at times in Dublin and also particularly in the border counties. And some of those bombs cause fatalities. There's bombs in Belturbet and Cavan, bombs in Clonus and Monaghan, bombs in Donegal. Up till 1976, bombs in Dundalk as well. And sometimes loyalists, gangs cross the border and kill people. The bombings in December 1972 in Dublin and again in January 1973, and the major bombs in 1974. So around over 50 people are killed because of usually loyalist bombs.
If I remember right, in the 90s, the loyalists were talking about restarting that. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, they attempted bombs again after the Anglo-Irish Agreement in the late 80s. And they were always fairly small incendiary-type devices, shops. 1994, in a major, the UVF attempted to bomb a Republican function in a pub in Dublin, and they were prevented from entering the pub by a doorman who was a member of the IRA and Martin Doherty, and he was shot dead, and the bomb didn't go off. Had it done so, you know, it had the potential to kill a large number of people. But again, of course, there's a whole I won't go into the whole argument about collusion and about the, you know, strategy behind the loyalist bombings. There certainly is a difference in terms of technology in comparison to the from 1970 to 1976, when the loyalists are very capable of car bombings in the Republic, and then the late 1980s, when most of their bombings tend to be incendiary devices in shops and all the rest, where they cause small fires but don't cause fatalities. And obviously there's a huge question about both the December 1972 bombs in Dublin and the Dublin-Monaghan bombings, about, you know, the level of technology and the strategy that's been employed. But just in terms of pure infliction of casualties, there's bombings up to 1976, and it makes people very nervous. I mean, people of a certain age will be, you know, will tell you how on any given Saturday, Henry Street or Grafton Street might have to be cleared because of a bomb scare, and how bomb scares were a regular part of life in the South, which in a way that it'd be completely, you know, seem very strange now.